Hello and welcome to Lush. In April this year, Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May called a snap general election to take place in June. The idea, presumably, was to take advantage of a 20-point Tory lead in the opinion polls and a widespread feeling that the government would increase its slim majority in the House of Commons to anything from 70 to 140 seats. Invigorated by what seemed like an ideal opportunity to finally wipe from the statute books the 2004 Hunting Act, which bans the hunting of mammals with dogs, hunting lobbyists, it seems, ensured that despite the Act being a successful and extremely popular piece of legislation, a free vote on repealing the ban was included in the Conservative manifesto. What could possibly go wrong? Seemingly out of nowhere, fox hunting, along with U-turns, the NHS and the so-called dementia tax, became one of the most debated issues in the election, helping, according to the BBC, to re-toxify the Conservative brand. Theresa May, aided by influential hunting lobbyists, somehow snatched near defeat from the jaws of victory and actually decreased her Commons majority, creating a hung parliament. Add to that, along with a vast majority of opposition MPs, many younger Conservative MPs themselves oppose repeal of the Hunting Act. Repeal now looks to be dead in the water, and that free vote may not even be included in the Queen's speech, which at the time of publishing this podcast has not yet been finalised. Is that the end of the story then? Is the Hunting Act finally safe? My name is Charlie Moores, and I put that question to Chris Luffingham, Director of Policy, Communications and Campaigns at the League Against Cruel Sports and previously National Campaigns Director for the Green Party. As a disclaimer, I should make it clear that I'm on the Board of Trustees of the League and, of course, a supporter of the Hunting Act myself. So on to the interview, and I began our conversation with a brief outline of the history of opposition to fox hunting. Chris, can I take you back to a time before the Hunting Act was passed? Hunting with dogs was legal. It had been taking place for hundreds of years. In fact, the oldest hunt in England was established sometime around the 1670s, I gather. Though not everybody supported hunting, of course. Opposition to hunting really began building in the 1800s. The League itself was founded in 1924. In 1979, the Labour Party manifesto opposed hunting for the first time. Then at last, everything changed with the passing of the Hunting Act, which bans the hunting of wild mammals with dogs. The arguments and the debates that sort of led up to that are not the subject of this podcast. I'm interested here in the technical side of lawmaking. How do you get a law passed? So how did the Hunting Act 2004 become law? And the flip side of that, how could it now be repealed?
The process of making a law is pretty straightforward in many regards, although Parliament, as is its way, has various kind of nuances and different mechanisms to be able to do different things. But essentially, when a government is formed, so they command a majority of MPs in the House of Commons, they put forward what's called a Queen's Speech, which is their outline of what they want to achieve and what they want to put before Parliament in the next session. And that forms the basis of their legislative agenda. And in order to pass a bill or a law, to bring a law into effect, you need a simple majority of MPs in the House of Commons, which, if you have been able to form a government, that's more than likely. Going back to when the hunting bill was passed, Tony Blair's majority in his second term was reduced, but it was still a significant majority. Mm. So it was very easy. And most governments have a working majority, which kind of brings us on to where we are at the moment, where the political instability is that there's only a majority being able to be formed if the Conservatives are able to make an alliance with, as is being talked about now, the DUP. They do not have an overall majority on their own, so they have to work with others.
And not all Tories are pro-repeal anyway, so it's difficult to assess the numbers yet because the election's was only last week or 2 weeks ago. So the actual figures aren't yet properly known, but the government does not have enough people on its side to repeal the Hunting Act.
Well, there's two things. There's two things that go into this. Before the election, Conservative Party said that they would hold a free vote on the repeal of the Hunting Act in the House of Commons. A free vote means that individual MPs can vote with their conscience, how they feel like, how they feel on the issue. They can vote either way with no sanctions or infringement on disobeying the party line.
So that's opposed to a whipped vote.
A whipped vote, yeah, exactly. A whipped vote, which the government demands, or whoever is in government demands that their MPs vote in a certain way because this is essential to government legislation, and it was something that was put in their manifesto, and they have been elected on a manifesto, and so they say, right, because that was in the manifesto, you stood on a manifesto for us, therefore you need to vote in this way. This is the third election in a row where the Conservative Party has put some pledge on fox hunting or hunting in general into their manifesto. In previous manifestos, they had said that we will vote to repeal the hunting ban. And this time, they changed it slightly into a free vote. So it wouldn't be whipped. It would be up to individual members to determine how they felt on the issue and vote accordingly, either to keep the ban or to repeal it. It was unlikely that even with a majority, they were going to have the numbers in order to repeal the ban. It would have been right on a knife edge, depending on the size of the majority. Given the election result, it looks hugely unlikely whether they would A, take the risk of trying to repeal the ban with a free vote, but it's not out of the question. You can't take it off the table completely because it is still in the manifesto. We'll have to wait and see if it appears in the Queen's speech, but I'll be very surprised if it does. You can still bring legislation forward even if it's not in the Queen's speech. That would be unusual, particularly on an issue like this that has appeared in the manifesto, is one of the issues that is very identifiable. To drop it from the Queen's speech and then to bring it back would be highly, highly unusual.
Where did the pressure come from to have the free vote included in the manifesto?
Well, I mean, that's speculation, obviously.
Yeah,
you can't say for sure where it's come from, but I think we know there are certain highly influential individuals that are aligned to the Countryside Alliance and are aligned to Hunts that are quite close to cabinet positions and to members of the cabinet. It's likely it's come from them. It's been in the manifesto three times now, and I think this was possibly their last chance to get it in there to appease some of their influential supporters and to try and make progress on it. They've had it in there twice. They've not been able to do anything. They put the weakest possible version of the intention in there in offering a free vote, saying it's, you know, conscience-driven, hoping that they would have a massive majority and be able to bring it through, and that's failed. If we do manage to avoid having a free vote on the repeal, it will be three times in a row now, and that should be three strikes and you're out. We shouldn't see it again.
It seems a very odd issue to put into a manifesto, doesn't it? I mean, it's hard to understand why repealing an act that stops people hunting wild animals with dogs should become such an issue in a manifesto, as you say, three times on the trot.
Well, it was astonishing that the Prime Minister opened her mouth and declared a position on this issue. Tactically, it was really silly. We know that 84% of the population are against hunting, and those figures are really robust. So we know most people do actually have an opinion on this. It's not an unknown issue. It is a divisive issue. It is a polarizing issue, rather. So it was very, very strange that she should, right out of the gates, decide that she was going to make a proclamation on where she stood on hunting. It came from nowhere. Mm. And actually, when you look back at the course of the election, her announcement on her position on hunting was when the wheels started to fall off the campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the first of what then turned into be many U-turns and policy catastrophes. And it's really the point where the campaign started to go downhill quite rapidly.
She doesn't actually hunt herself, does she? So again, it's a very strange thing to have brought up.
It was very strange. It was really, really, really odd that she should bring it into the spotlight in the way that she did. I mean, it massively helped us. We didn't have to raise the issue anymore. It became a major issue. And all of the figures now post-campaign have said that, you know, this was one of the deciding issues. BBC put it in its top 10 of issues in the campaign. BuzzFeed said there were more articles written about this. Four of the top 20 most shared articles were on hunting, and another 10 in the top 250, I think. The Guardian, Independent have all suggested this was a major, major issue of the campaign, and one that did sway voters who were going to vote one way. And maybe they didn't vote, maybe they voted in the opposite way. But it certainly had an impact.
Laws are repealed, not all the time, but laws do get repealed. There have been lots of pro-wildlife laws in the past. Those have tended in a way to get sort of wrapped up into larger, more comprehensive laws like the Wildlife and Countryside Act, say. There's no suggestion that the Hunting Act could be wrapped into a more comprehensive law, is there? What they're looking for is repeal, which would just take it off the statute books completely.
That's the original intention. But actually, when you look at it, that's not the biggest threat to the Hunting Act. The repeal is a threat, and that's not to say it's not a threat and not a small threat. It's a big threat. And I hope, I sincerely hope, that we've kind of avoided that as an issue, given the nature of Parliament and how precarious it is at the moment. The big issue really now is around Brexit. And the fear for me was the intention, or rather the plan, that when we leave Europe, there are up to 1,000 pieces of legislation that then need to be redrawn and redrafted and brought before Parliament and passed into law. One of the big threats would be that in a bill which essentially covered a number of different areas, maybe 20 or 30 different pieces of legislation, there would have been one in there that perhaps wasn't explicitly about hunting, but would have the effect to dilute the Hunting Act to such an extent that it may as well have been a repeal. And you have new MPs who may very well be against hunting and may very well be against repealing the ban, but in the context of 20, 30 pieces of government legislation, which are really, really important, are they going to vote that down in the context of derailing the government's agenda? And we don't know the answer to that, and we are not likely now to know the answer to that because of the result of the election. Because there isn't a majority, the government, the Conservative Party, plus the DUP, plus anybody else, is going to have to be a lot more consensual around how they do things, because it is very possible now small numbers of people are going to be able to determine the ways in which certain legislation is passed. When you are dealing with very small majorities, it only takes one or two who you think are in your on your side, or even one or two who you know are not on your side, to say, well, actually, no, I don't agree with that.
Right.
They now have huge amounts of power.
Which is why it's very hard today to say that we have X number of people who are pro-repeal and we have X number of people who are anti-repeal. The Hunting Act might just get put in as almost as a subset of some other law that everybody's having to look at.
Yeah, there are two different things. There's being anti-repeal, which we know the numbers are on our side. I mean, we've got to do a lot more number crunching as to how that works out. But we do know that more MPs are against repeal than are in favour of it. It's a different question how individuals would feel when it was based around the kind of question of a batch of legislation, because it becomes about something else, and whether they are willing to maintain and potentially to strengthen wildlife protection laws in relation to what else might be on the table.
So we would really need a very strong environment secretary who was very pro wildlife and nature to ensure that our wildlife would be protected into the future. And we really haven't got that.
Well, no, we haven't. Hey, Michael Gove is all over the place with regards to the environment. And we know that he's been described and has described himself as being pro-hunt. But what that means in the context of a repeal bill and then also later legislation is anybody's guess. I remain hopeful that he's open to convincing. And I think, you know, politicians generally follow the popular opinion, yeah, and where, the way that the wind is blowing. I think it's pretty clear that as far as the public is concerned, this is a non-issue. People can't believe that they were still talking about this stuff. It should have died out in the 19th century, let alone the 21st century. I remain hopeful that he can be convinced. I mean, what a rehabilitation program for him. I mean, if he could come full circle on this, if he could find his way to actually supporting the hunting ban and to strengthening and furthering animal protection laws, what a rehabilitation that would be in the eyes of the public. And if you want to be the next Prime Minister of the country, I would suggest that's probably a pretty good way to go.
Rehabilitation is a really good word, because at the moment Michael Gove is not the most popular of politicians.
There are a couple of figures within the government that I think kind of fit that profile. You have absolutely no idea how they got there, and have absolutely no idea how it is they keep their positions, seeing as they continue to make themselves really unpopular with the departments that they are meant to be serving. But they remain in several iterations of government, so they must have something going on.
I know there's only so much we can say about politicians. Clearly, we have to be quite careful about these things. Can we just quickly talk about statutory instruments? Because that came up in the last parliament. There was this threat of a statutory instrument which might be used to weaken the Hunting Act to such an extent that it was practically not worth having.
Statutory instruments are very, very similar to what I was talking about earlier in terms of wrapping it up in other legislation. That's still fairly likely within, as a possibility of it actually kind of occurring. But I think it will happen, as I said before, in the context of Brexit. But we remain to see. Again, everything is up in the air at the moment because the numbers are so tight. Any false step could lead to defeat of important legislation or legislation that is important to the government. So whether they are likely to take the risk of introducing something that is potentially divisive is another question.
All right.
But it's not off the table.
A statutory instrument is really a way of speeding a change through, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a quick, sharp way of changing law.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's meant to be quick and sharp, but it's also meant to be on measures that are not controversial.
Which always struck me as quite ironic, really, that they were using
which
all
is
this
why,
again.
It's yeah, no, exactly.
Strange, isn't it?
But it's why the language is often it appears to be quite tame. So, yeah, it's meant to be. These processes are meant to occur for non-controversial measures.
And hunting has become one of the most controversial.
We know, as we know from this campaign, it always has been. It always has been a controversial thing. But what this campaign has done is really kind of shine a spotlight on it. So everybody is going to be watching. There's nobody that's not going to be watching and won't see what is really happening if it happens.
What are the possible grounds for repeal? Because it's very hard to understand any argument that's going to say, yes, we need to bring back hunting with dogs. It's the most important thing we could possibly do in the next government. It does all seem to be around the fact is some people enjoy it and would like to bring it back.
Well, no, absolutely. I mean, I would say this, wouldn't I? But there are no reasons. There's no demand to bring it back. There's no need to bring it back. All of the arguments around fox hunting in particular, hunting in general, have been shot down in flames. Mm. And I remember right at the very beginning of the campaign, I had an interview on BBC Radio Teesside with a Conservative county councillor, I think, or district councillor. And we played out all of these arguments. And in the end, he just said, yeah, well, I like doing it for fun. You're not going to understand that, but this is what I do for fun.
Mm.
That's it.
Yeah, so
you play out all of these arguments and they can be shot down one by one.
Yeah.
But if that's what they think fun is, then you're going to have a hard time changing their mind, but that doesn't make it right.
They're going to have a hard time persuading the general public that it should be allowed again. So.
Of course, if that's the basis upon which you are maintaining this, then it's not going to work.
So, as of June 2017, I know it's very difficult to summarise this, but where are we with the Hunting Act, do you think? We can't quite say it's safe yet, but it's safer than it has been for quite some time.
It's safer than it has been for quite some time, I think, is about as far as we can go. The mood in the country is quite clear that nobody wants to see this ban repealed. It's quite clear that nobody actually wants to see parliamentary time taken up discussing whether the ban should be repealed.
They have a fairly full agenda for the next 2 years.
I think there's more than enough on a parliamentary timetable to mean that this is a piece that should just kind of slide off and be forgotten about. But it's not just about forgetting about it. from our perspective, we need now to push forward and not just be happy that we're going to avoid the threat of there being a straight up and down repeal vote, whether we should have it or not, and we should actually push forward and say, right, well, the whole environment has changed. We are going to have a different kind of negotiation around our leaving the European Union. There is still going to be legislation that needs to be written. But the mood music now is, well, we should make it stronger. We should actually be the example, and we should actually set pretty high standards that everybody else looks to across a whole range of issues, and not just hunting. You know, we know that our animal cruelty sentencing laws are the weakest in Europe, apart from Belgium, I think. So we have that distinction.
Fines are very low, sentences
are very low. And this is an opportunity for us to actually really push the agenda, because if there's one thing this election has done, it's shown that there is a huge number of people that are interested in this issue. They will change the way they vote.
Which is the ultimate sanction, isn't it?
Yeah.
The feeling on social media has kind of been that this is finished now, that the debate is over, our side has won. That isn't the case, which is partly what I wanted to prove with this interview here. What can we keep doing? I don't mean the league. I mean people who are listening to this.
Sure.
What can we do to keep the issue hot and to make sure the repeal or amendments are not enacted in this coming parliament?
We've won a battle, but actually the war still needs to be fought. There's a bigger war that's going on. We now need to kind of keep pressure up, keep momentum going, and keep politicians and newly elected MPs on their toes and very clear in their own minds as to where their constituents stand. There's nothing that will motivate and drive a politician to do something or not to do something if his mail bag is overflowing with letters that say, why are you doing this? If you do this, I'm not going to vote for you.
Yeah.
Because we are in a situation whereby it's very possible we could have another election by the end of the year. That's not unlikely. I'm not saying it's likely, but it's certainly not unlikely. The newly elected politicians are going to want to get re-elected. The way that we keep them to task is by continuing to get their views on the record so they can be held to account.
Yeah.
So if you're ever short of something to do, then you write to your MP about it and tell them exactly how you feel, or even book an appointment to go and see them. Take up their parliamentary surgery time where they can listen to constituents, go to events. MPs like to speak in public, ask them questions, get them on record as to where they stand on a whole range of issues, and then you can hold them to account. We know the numbers are on our side. We know that 84% of the people in the country are against hunting. What politicians will try and do is not to have a view. What they should be doing is taking the views of their constituents into account with regards to any future vote that they may take part in. And the more we get them on record and the more we get them to state their views, the better place we're going to be when and if anything happens that we need to mobilise support for.
You're quite a political animal, so I shouldn't ask you this, Chris, but is this a war that we're going to win?
Yes.
Chris, thank you very much indeed.
No worries.
Chris Luffingham, Director of Policy, Communications and Campaigns at the League Against Cruel Sports. If you'd like to find out more about the work of the League, please go to league.org.uk. Thank you very much indeed for listening. If you'd like to hear more from Lush, and our ever-growing archive contains interviews, debates and stories with a wide range of charities, organisations and individuals, please download the free Lush Player app, which is available for both Android and Apple.